On today's episode of the Fumble Rooski podcast, the Jaguars get the win in the retros against the Chiefs 31-28. Just happened right here, right now. Along with this, the Patriots with a Sunday night football upset in Buffalo. The gap for that AFC East division just shrunk a little bit. Just shrunk by that much. Bucks get the win against the Seahawks. Baker shows out again against Sam Darnold. And the Broncos knock off the Eagles. No more undefeated teams through 5 weeks of the NFL season. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. He's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. And boy, we're going to mention this later on when we start to, when we recorded earlier. It's going to be later on in the episode, but we talked about the amount of really good games that we got this week, and here's your cherry on top. Here is your cherry on top. Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars, wild last-minute touchdown to get the win over the Chiefs. Boy, this had it all. This had it all. That is for sure. A lot of eyes on Travis Hunter, who's playing both sides of the ball, mainly defense, still ended up with 3 catches. And you could kind of start to see the effects on him. But back to Trevor Lawrence. He was starting to look like Clemson T-Law again. He was starting to look like that again, especially that last drive. And, boy, Mahomes had a solid day too. But tonight was the Jags' night. And there's no question about it. And now they're 4-1. Who would have thought that the Jags would be 4-1 right now? Not me. Definitely not me.
No, shit, I didn't either. I mean, look, I liked Liam Cohen as a coach, but 4-1? Well, how do you like that?
I had them fucking losing this game. I mean, granted,
to be fair, this was my upset of the week, but you'd have to call it upset, you know, meaning that you know they're not favored going in, and you know it's a shot in the dark.
Yeah. I mean, this game ended up getting turned on its head with a Devin Floyd 99-yard pick six. And then Casey was able to drive back down, score. But Trevor basically just came down to Trevor Lawrence falling down. His right guard stepped on him. He fell down in the worst spot possible on what? It was like 3rd and goal or something like that. And somehow gets up, avoids 2 D linemen, and scores the go-ahead score. The go-ahead touchdown to win the game. Insane. Insane. Well, the Jags, I think, have shown that they are going to compete, that they are definitely going to be a big competitor for the AFC South, first off, with the Colts. In terms of the rest of the conference, I think they've definitely shown that they can, that they're going to be a playoff contender at this point. This was one of those wins that kind of, that is going to elevate you to the next level. And finally seems like it's things are starting to turn around for the Jaguars a little bit. Like, Brian Thomas had 4 catches for 80 yards. He had a good day. But you love to see what Trevor Lawrence put out there as well. That's for sure.
Hey, you know, this is one of those games where, say what you will, but you got to tip your hat to Jacksonville, don't you? Like you said, are we seeing Clemson T-Law? Are we seeing Clemson T-Law right now? That's the thing. I mean, we might be. And, you know, the Jaguars defense, you know, we all knew it was suspect coming in, but that offense outmaneuvering it. Travis Hunter, 3 catches, 64 yards, you know, still taking a bit to warm up. Brian Thomas Jr. finally getting in his rhythm, having that huge, huge catch on third down. You know,
that was a great catch.
You see it. Also, like you said, the Devin Lloyd 99-yard pick six. That's one of those games where it wasn't the prettiest, it wasn't the cleanest. Everyone stepped in and did their part, and plain as that, it was an upset. David took down Goliath, and that's going to be the end of it. You know, you got a good win at home. And that's the thing. Like, if you're doing that in Arrowhead, maybe that doesn't fly. But in the Swamp in Jacksonville? Hey, some magic happened there, I tell you what. And the biggest part about this, you know what the best part is?
What is it?
Travis Etienne really didn't do much of anything. And as a result, I won in fantasy.
Oh, good for you. That's lovely. That's
I know. I didn't want to make this about me, but hey, you got to crack a
joke. No. You're just going to rub it in my face because two of my fantasy teams just ate shit this week.
If it makes you feel any better, I went 1-1. And the one league where I lost, I now am down Omarion Hampton, who's going to be on IR. Does that make you feel any better?
No, it doesn't. Because I'm about to be 0-5 in one of my leagues, and I put up 86 points.
Oh, I lost. Well, in the league I lost, and I put up 145. So, you know, sometimes it really do be like that. So
I picked up Rico Dowdle Sunday morning.
Okay, But I do want to talk about this game from the Chiefs' perspective.
Yes.
Feels like I say this every time they lose, but it's true. This was a very un-Chiefs game. Very un-Chiefs. Three costly, costly penalties from when they score the touchdown, right, to go up 28-24. It was just a comedy of errors since then. Penalty number one, probably the most boneheaded of them, the infamous free kick out of bounds. I mean, sure, the Chiefs defense is still good. We all know that. You know, Steve Spagnuolo, you know, always spamming blitzes and stuff, and they do have some good talent there. But it, you know, would you rather pin the Jaguars back at the 10 or let them get the ball at the 40? Yeah, it's a no-brainer. So that already bad. Then you get the game-sealing pick, right? Just kidding, pass interference. And look, on the show, you, me, Adam, and even Tuck have debated the merit of those late game flags, you know, the one that can swing the game either way. We talked about, oh, do you let him play? Do you put the flag, you know, you keep it in the back pocket? Well, this was pretty clear cut, was it not?
I agree.
You call it. I think it was Chamari Connor on Brian Thomas Jr. Literally was like hugging him, had his arms pinned. That's not even a ticky tack call. That was pretty blatant. Sets it up at the one. You mentioned it. Lawrence gets his foot stepped on by, I think, his right guard. Falls down, picks himself up, handles his business, gets the touchdown. And then for Kansas City, you get a pretty solid return. And it's like, oh, hey, they got some spark in them. The only downside is diddied up some of the clock, but you're in good field position. Ha! Just kidding. Well, penalty number three, holding. And, yeah, three untimely penalties in under 2 minutes, or essentially, you know, give or take. That, you know, that's not very Chiefs-like. And Joe Buck and Troy Aikman even said it on the broadcast about they're making like weird mistakes that you don't expect them to make because, you know, they're the big dynasty, you know, they're what's right now, they're what's happening now. And they get compared to the previous dynasty of the New England Patriots and how one of the big similarities is, you know, they don't make mistakes. They play very precise, very clean, mistake-free football. In Kansas City, they just shot them. Forget shooting themselves in the foot. They blew their head off. Like I said, those three penalties in under 2 minutes. And here's the thing. You can call that ref ball all you want. You can say, oh, the refs saved the Jags. But those were pretty blatant. You know, they weren't ticky-tack. Free kick out of bounds is pretty clear cut. That PI was egregious, and that holding was pretty obvious, too. Like I said, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of late-game flags, but like I said, you see it, you call it, especially when it's blatant. So for the Chiefs, that was a winnable game, and you guys just completely just, like I said, shot yourselves in the foot, doesn't go far enough. But for Kansas City, you went out there and you capitalized, or I meant for Jacksonville, You went out there and you capitalized on Kansas City's mistakes. For me, that's the biggest part. It's not so much beating a team as it is watching them make a mistake and capitalizing on it. That's huge. I think that was the biggest part. And for the Jags, no ifs, ands, or buts. They deserve this win.
Yeah. Looking ahead for the Chiefs, you would much rather be 3-2 than 2-3 because you're going up against the Detroit Lions on Sunday Night Football Week 6. The way the Lions are playing, goodness gracious, this could be interesting. But it's at Arrowhead, so got to give them the benefit of the doubt for that one. But after that, they got the Raiders, and Geno Smith's been looking like dog shit. But then they got the Commies on Monday Night Football. They seem to be picking it up a little bit again, so that's going to be another tough one potentially than the Bills next week's first weekend of November. So it's not getting much easier for the Chiefs. This is going to be an interesting stretch for them. All right.
Yeah, that's like I said, this is a very weird start for them.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah, weird's an understatement on this one. That is for certain. 2-3 at this point of the season. And like, honestly, I'd be down to just chalk up the Lions game next week as a loss. Like, that's how confident I'm feeling about Detroit. All right.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah, you have a point.
Yeah. Week 5, top 3, bottom 3. Do this every week. Let us know who you think shouldn't have been or should be on this list. Starting out.
Well, here we go. This is, yeah. Now you go. I'm sorry. This is one of the lists of all time. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's pretty clear cut, you know, when you think about it, at least for the top three.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Bottom three. Yeah. There was some disastrous, pretty bad performances. There's going to be some good honorable mentions. Top three. The New England Patriots. Incredible performance from Drake May. Stephon Diggs. Huge revenge game. He showed out. Defense showed out. Massive pick from Marcus Jones. And biggest thing is that you have shrunken the gap in what the competition of the AFC East division is going to look like. Broncos. Very slow start to the season. And with this win, and along with the win from last weekend, along with the win from last Monday night as well, starting to get the wheels turn a little bit, starting to get yourself into that right direction. And a gutsy move like that 2-point conversion can obviously bring a lot of momentum into a game, but put a lot of momentum into the season, put a lot of gas to the fire. And then coming in right at the horn, the Jacksonville Jaguars. We talked about it already, but not much else you could say. Trevor Lawrence had himself a great game. Jaguars looked fantastic. Would have liked to have seen the offense do a little bit, maybe a little bit more from the offense. I don't know, but defense made some big plays. Offense made Trevor Lawrence made some big plays when he needed to, and everything seemed like it was clicking the way that they're hoping to from the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Like you said, we just talked about the Jags. Like you said, what else can you say? You know, you capitalized on Kansas City's mistakes, well-deserved win. For New England and Denver, you know, they're obviously locks, right? They both took down the two last undefeated teams. And, you know, Broncos with that stellar comeback win against the Eagles and the Patriots snuffing out the Bills' fourth quarter rally. Yep, all three well-deserved. I feel like the only honorable mention you could go with is probably Tampa. after that thrilling win over Seattle in our what we said before was the game of the week. So overall, definitely well deserved. I mean, probably maybe you could argue that the Bucs should be in there, but after that Jaguars victory, like you said, coming in at the buzzer.
Yeah, there was no denying the Jags tonight. Bottom three. Goodness, this is. I want to start backwards from like least ridiculous to most ridiculous on this one. Ravens.
Yeah.
Yeah, half their team was hurt.
But injuries. Houston. Okay, look, I understand. I'm sorry. I don't want to jump down your throat.
No, it's fine.
But dude, I understand that you're missing Lamar Jackson, but does that really excuse the lack of effort? That's my question. I just don't think it does. That was a gutless and spineless performance. They looked like they didn't want to be there, and you let the offensively challenged Houston Texans run up the score on you, a team that has not had a competent offensive showing since CJ Stroud's rookie year.
I'll leave it at that. Dolphins. They started out hot in this game. They really did. And then Bryce Young threw his early game interception, and all of a sudden he just turned it on. You made Rico Dowdle look like – you made him look like fucking prime Walter Payton or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Miami has no defense. We already knew that.
Yeah. Yeah,
and they don't have defense. And at this point, it's literally a matter of when, not if, McDaniel gets fired. Chris, I know you said they might wait to the end of the season, but you lost to the Panthers. You barely beat the Jets. Then you turn around and lose to the Panthers. Nah, so, it's over. You're cooked, flambéed, fried. Like, nah, it's over.
So I said that off camera, but on camera I did say that I could see them firing McDaniel if they were to lose to the Jets and or the Panthers. And here they are. They lost to – or they beat the Jets, but now they've lost to the Panthers. And now we're recording this near midnight after Monday Night Football. If McDaniel is going to get fired, I think it would have happened by now. So that leads me to believe that it's either going to be end of season or like right before the season ends.
Yeah.
One of the two. Cardinals. I mean, look, it's.
I'm sorry. That was.
Where do you want to start? Do you want to start from beginning, or you want to just go all over the place with this? Because that's what it felt like with this game.
I can just break it down because it's really the fourth quarter is when it happened.
Yeah, I mean, just like the Cardinals were rolling in this game. Like,
yeah, they were literally up 21-6 with a little over 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and they lost 22-21. And it's not like the Titans it was 22-21, right?
Yes.
And it's not like the Titans gave some big, like, rally, you know what I mean? Like Denver did against the Eagles. Oh, no. The Cardinals were at the finish line and decided, I'm just going to go backwards. That might be a fun thing to do because we're in the desert and there's nothing better to do in the desert. I don't know where that's going, but whatever. And it all starts with Amari DiMercato, the running back, who I have in fantasy. Thanks for fumbling, buddy. That helped. I mean, I won, but not because of you. Where, you know, he just flies down the field. Offensive line blasts a gaping hole in the defense. And that goober pulls an Adonai Mitchell, a DeSean Jackson, a whoever, you know, in recent vintage. And drops the ball before he gets to the goal line. And fumbles it out of bounds fumbles it out of the end zone for a touchback. And you know what the funniest part is, Chris? Did you see what he said after the game?
Yeah, happens to the best of us.
Yeah, happens to the best of us.
Did you see the video?
Buddy, you are losing your job. Michael Carter's going to eat up all of your touches.
Did you see the video of Jonathan Gannon like screaming at him on the sideline?
Oh, yeah. Gannon let him know. Gannon absolutely gave him the business, and rightfully so. You know, you can't have your players doing that. Although I just think it's funny that it's coming from Jonathan Gannon, who, you know, literally cost his former team the Super Bowl because he was too busy negotiating his future contract rather than game planning. But chat, is that karma? I'll leave that up to you. But that's not the funny part. The funny part was, you know, the Titans have a chance, you know, to really put some pressure on the Cardinals, right? You know, they need a touchdown to stay alive. And so what happens? Bryce Young, the pressure, Bryce Young, good God, Cam Ward, can you tell it's late? The pressure's there immediately. He gets popped as he's throwing it, and it's a duck, right? Complete ugly wobbling ball, easy interception for the Arizona linebacker. I think that was Clark, number 23. And, you know, he secures the catch, he runs, and that doofus trips over his own 2 feet and fumbles the ball. And, you know, he hits the ground, ball comes out. I know a lot of people. I saw some Cardinals fans online saying, it's not a fumble. The ground can't cause a fumble. It's like, oh, it can if you fall down and you weren't touched. I mean, if he was touched down, that'd be one thing. But, Chris, you played football. You obviously know that. And the ball comes out. I think one of their safeties tried to grab it, and he couldn't corral it, which led to Tyler Lockett jumping on it in the end zone for a Titans touchdown. That is just insane. That is a complete and utter clown. That's clown behavior. No, this isn't even a clown team. They're the whole circus.
And then you got Joey Sly stepping up to the plate and kicking a game-winning field goal after he had like one of the worst misses I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my God.
I think that was like the perfect cherry on top for the whole thing. It was so, because I was like, oh my God, Joey Sly. It was on like an extra point as well, I'm pretty sure. And yeah, that's why it was 21-6 to begin with, because Joey Sly like shanked the extra point. God, the whole thing's just so funny. But yeah, combination of you blew the lead to one of the worst teams in the league, and you do it in like the stupidest freaking ways possible. The DeMarcado fumble and the interception fumble into the end zone. Just, oh, fun times in the NFL. Yeah.
Week 5 is certainly one of the weeks of all time. Might even go down as the craziest week in the season, barring whatever tomfoolery happens week 18, because you know how it is.
Yeah. But a couple other honorable mentions for bottom three. Vegas. I mean, yeah, Colts are a friggin' wagon, but Geno Smith has been dog shit.
Mm-hmm. He's been dog shit. And you want to hear a really horrible Geno Smith fact?
What, besides the fact that, besides why he got punched in the face by his teammate?
No. So, Chris, how many games have the Raiders played this season?
Well, 5.
Yes. So, across 5 games, Geno Smith has 9 interceptions.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible.
I feel so stupid for ever gassing this whack-ass team up. I thought, hey, you know, they're just rebuilding. You know, they're just trying to build a floor, get back with a clean slate so they can take over with a new head coach and a young quarterback. And you can't even do that. You cannot have Jack in Vegas. The house always wins. And Raiders, you ain't the house.
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be a transitional period, but this has been.
Oh, so what's going on? They're transitioning from garbage to slightly more aggravating garbage.
That's what I'm saying. Is like it's supposed to be a transitional period, and they're just it's shitty. It is not going well. Because like, sure, especially when you have the combination of Pete Carroll and Geno Smith, you'd expect it to be better. But like, I mean. Yeah, Geno Smith is not playing up to expectations to be a $70 million quarterback, but the team's just also not good enough in general. Team just sucks.
Unfortunately so.
Yeah, like no amount of Pete Carroll will save this team.
I mean, look, it sucks, but it's true. I mean, Pete Carroll, I still think, is a good coach. It's just – Geno Smith doesn't have that magic he had when he was when he revived his career in Seattle. You know, he always said, oh, they wrote me off. I didn't write back. Well, buddy, maybe you should start writing back. Because yeah. 9 interceptions in 5 games, that's something that even Brett Favre would decry.
Yeah. Another honorable mention, the Chargers. Only 10 points. You had a chance to win. And Herbert throws the interception at the goal line, basically just sealing your fate. Just started out 3-0, now you've lost your last two. It's not fun times in LA right now. I mean, besides the fact that you are 3-2, you still have a winning record, but you know, right when you think things have turned around, there are still a lot of question marks.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This is just, it's late. It was a weird week.
I'm ready. Yeah. All right. Well, let's kick it to ourselves for, we're going to talk about the Pat, games that I lined out in the open. Pats, Bills, Broncos, Eagles, and Bucks, Seahawks. And that's how we'll end the show. All right. Let's kick it to ourselves for those games. This is the Fulham Brewski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fulham Brewski Podcast. He's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. Let's get into some of these games. And boy, what a week 5 this was. We probably already spoke about it at the top of the show about how great these games were. But goodness, this was a good week of football, CJ. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Talk about him. I really enjoyed this week.
And you know, the thing with me is a week of football is that much sweeter when you wake up on Monday morning and your team gets a win on primetime football. And that's the case here. The Patriots stunned the Bills 23-20 on the road on Sunday Night Football. You know, those Bills jerseys, ice cold. I was a big fan of them.
Yeah, cold front, they called it. Unfortunately for them, what does my tagline say? Snow melts in May.
And this is now the third consecutive game where Drake May has, fourth consecutive game, which is now tied with Tom Brady for most consecutive games with over a 70% completion percentage and over 200 yards passing. And prior to this game, he was tied with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson for most consecutive games with 1+ rushing touchdown and 2+ passing touchdowns and 1+ rushing touchdown, along with those 200+ passing yards. So he's in some damn good company, and he's playing some damn good football. Like, the throws that Drake May was making last night got me into an absolute tizzy. I was at my girlfriend's last night watching the game, and it took all of me not to yell at the top of my lungs to wake her up, to wake her neighbors up. Like, it was, that got me giddy. That got me giddy all night long. No Josh. But this was Stephon Diggs. I can't remember the last time I saw a man so possessed, so maniacal, to get revenge on his former team. And you want to know something, CJ? This isn't the first time that he's done something like this. So he had 10 catches, 146 yards on Sunday night. Last time that he had this, he was on the Bills against the Vikings and put up over 128 passing yards. So
passing yards, really?
What was that?
You said Diggs put up 128 passing yards. That's
Receiving yards. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm messing with you.
But yeah, either way, Stephon Diggs, he is a revenge game merchant by the means, if you want to go with that route. But This was also the most passing yards he's put up in the last two seasons. Passing yards. I keep saying passing yards. Receiving yards. This is the most receiving yards that Diggs has had since 23. I forget which week it was. May have actually been against the Pats for all I know. But this is now back-to-back weeks that he's had over 100 receiving yards. It's starting to finally feel like that we're seeing the Diggs of old. And after the game last night, it finally was like, wow, I can't believe Stephon Diggs is on my team right now. This is fantastic. I'm sorry I'm turning to I'm being a massive Pats homer right now, but it's just hard to get excited or not to get excited for what we just watched. Defense played outstanding. This was a game. So let's get into the actual game itself. This is a game that started ugly. Ugly with a capital U. Very ugly. Neither team looked like they actually wanted to score at first. Pats were able to punch in a field goal after the second Bills fumble that they gave up. Josh Allen also had a bad turnover in the red zone as well that really swung that. I wouldn't say completely swung the game in New England's favor, but New England at that point was up. They were up three at that point, maybe seven. And Josh Allen throws a turnover. Pats drive down the field. They score, make it a 10-point game. And credit to the Bills, came back, tied it up. But Drake May, first career game-winning drive, got the job done. Ramondre Stevenson is still, unfortunately, a problem. Fumbling again. He did pick it up by scoring two touchdowns, but when you look at his box score, you may as well think that he's a fullback at this point. And, you know, there's obviously still some questions, especially with the running back room. There's obviously some questions with that, especially now that you have Antonio Gibson with a knee injury. That sucked to watch, that's for sure. So in that case, you do hope that Trevion Henderson gets more touches as a result. But especially when you don't have, especially when Antonio Gibson was immediately ruled out with the knee injury, that's never a good sign. But let's get away from that. CJ, your thoughts from this game on the Patriots standpoint. We'll go to the Bills in a second, but give me your Pat side of things to start.
Well, from the Pat side, in order to understand how big this game is, I feel like you have to look at history. You know what I mean? So I believe this is the first Patriots primetime win since the 2023 season, and it's the first time they've won back-to-back games since 2022. And on top of that, which I think is something even bigger, ever since Tom Brady left, every single time they've beaten a team with a really good quarterback or a team above 500, there has always been an asterisk. Like that one time Mac Jones went into Buffalo and upset them. Bills fans started pouting about the weather, like it totally didn't affect both teams. Like when Cam Newton upset Lamar Jackson and how they were like, oh, yeah, I think two of their starting defenders left the game in the fourth quarter. Or when they upset the Titans with Mac Jones in 2021. Yeah, and, you know, that's when the Titans were, like, at their peak. And it's like, no, but there was no A.J. Brown. Or when Mac Jones beat the Bills, I think it was in Buffalo or New England with that game-winning touchdown to Hunter Henry. There was like, oh, it was a bad officiated game. Well, guess what? Now there's no asterisks to this game. There's no what ifs. Oh, what, Buffalo? Are you going to pull Ed Oliver out of your ass and say, oh, if we had him, we win? Yeah, ooh, Ed Oliver's going to make the difference here. No,
I was about to say, Ed Oliver was probably the one asterisk you could have possibly.
No, there's literally not. On, but like, he's not a game wrecker. Like, this does not change regardless.
With the elevation of Ed Oliver, they also, or the downgrade of Ed Oliver, they received Matt Milano back.
Yeah, so it's a dead even. So, yeah, I mean, they got Milano, so it doesn't matter. And for the Patriots, it's just nice knowing that, and if you look at the stats, you might think Drake May was a game manager because he didn't have any passing or rushing touchdowns. But he has made some insane throws, threading the needle, dropping the ball right into the hands of, well, usually Stephon Diggs, and throwing people open. That's going to be one of the most underrated parts of a quarterback's game, just throwing someone open. You know, you look at Diggs and, you know, it's that chemistry right there where Drake May can throw the ball perfectly and just allow Diggs to get it. Like I said, just like throwing them open. That's just some next level stuff right there. And Drake May continues to be cash money on third and fourth downs. He's, I believe, I don't know how the stats are going to shake out after this week, but he's top five, if not top three, in terms of QB efficiency.
On third down, yeah.
Yeah, on third and fourth. That's it. Like, he's one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the entire NFL. And the thing is, when you look at what he has to deal with, right? Diggs is finally coming around. And then you've got guys like, you know, Kayshon Booty's fine. DeMario Douglas has been mildly disappointing. Stevenson, you know, keeps fumbling the ball. I mean, Hunter Henry's fine. The offensive line is unproven, you know, like young, because you've got two rookies there and Jared Wilson, Will Campbell, who, to be fair, looked really, really good. Oh,
Will Campbell's been playing like a top five offensive tackle in terms of PFF grade.
He had a bit of a rough start to the season, but he and especially Jared Wilson have really been finding their groove there, and it's kind of gone under the radar. So when you look at the fact that Drake May doesn't have the Avengers around him, you know, he doesn't have Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, CD Lamb, what have you. He doesn't have that, and he's still making the plays. The defense, maybe the defense has been a tad underwhelming as of late, but they're stepping up and making the plays when they need to. Like, you know, the Bills, once again, just marching down the field, and Marcus Jones executes a perfect corner lurk and picks off Josh Allen. Defense also recovered a fumble as well in the first quarter.
Two fumbles.
Two fumbles, that's it. And, you know, they were getting to Allen. I mean, I think they only ended up having one sack, but they forced Allen out of the pocket. Because that's the thing. The Bills' O-line has been sneaky underrated, you know, with guys like David Edwards, Deion Dawkins, Spencer Brown. And the Patriots, I think, like I said, I think they only got to Allen once, maybe twice. But the pressure was there. They were forcing him out of the pocket. They kept him uncomfortable all game. And that's, you know, that's just half the battle. Plus, Christian Gonzalez being back, that helps a lot. He's still maybe a tiny bit rusty, but hey. They're still afraid to throw in his direction, so you got to love that. Safety play is getting better. And honestly, this is the brightest New England's future has looked since probably 2021. Is it a mirage like 2021? That remains to be seen. But Drake May is looking legit.
Yeah. And we were talking about this prior to the show as well. This next, basically the rest of the month of October is somewhat of a cakewalk. You got the Saints, the Titans, and the Browns for your next three games. And then once you hit November, you're home against the Falcons. And then it starts to get tough again once you got to go on the road to Tampa Bay. And at that point, they'll probably be full strength again, most likely. So that's when things will start to kind of get a little harder again. But after Tampa, it's the Jets, the Bengals, and the Giants before you got the Bills and the Ravens again. So there's a chance for New England to, I wouldn't say close the gap. I feel like with this game, they've massively closed the gap, and you could argue that, like, a game like this, especially when you factor in the loss that they had against the Steelers, one of my boys had a great point about this was, you know, theoretically, the Pats weren't supposed to win this game. Mm-hmm. So you could say, hey, we got that Steelers game back, and now we're at 3-2 because Pats should have beat the Steelers a couple weeks ago. Now they're right back where they need to be. And they have severely closed the gap on what the AFC East is going to look like for the rest of the season. And depending on what the Bills end up doing, going to the Bills right now, Josh Allen kind of looked like his younger self in terms of the turnovers, one interception, one fumble lost. He still had a good game, 22 for 31, 253. It was just all around, held James Cook to under 3.5 yards per carry. This Dalton Kincaid had a good day, six catches, 108 yards. This is a game where they just kept shooting themselves in the foot. And we'll talk about it with the Eagles as well. You know, you're not obviously going to win every single game. And you could obviously just mark this up to be you faced a divisional opponent and they got the job done against you. How do you respond next week? I'm not worried about Buffalo at all. Especially when you look at their next two games, they got the Falcons and the Panthers, Falcons next week on Monday Night Football. So they'll definitely be able to, bounce back with at least one win.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think so. But as far as New England goes here, like you said, with that upcoming schedule, that looks good. And for the Bills, 3 turnovers and 11 penalties. And that's one of the things that has become a more underrated part of Josh Allen's game. You know, we knew him as the proverbial gunslinger, right? You know, how it's like, yeah, he's going to throw for all the touchdowns. He's got wheels. You know, he can run for all the touchdowns as well. But you know, but the turnovers were a nasty part of his game. And for like the past two-ish seasons, you know, year and a half, whatever, he's pretty much cleaned it up. But this was old Josh Allen. And I'm not going to lie, when you are a quarterback for that long, and you know, we broke down the Marcus Jones interception, that was just a boneheaded read. It's tight coverage. You can blatantly see the corner doing what they call a lurk, where, you know, he's just baiting, and, you know, Marcus Jones, he's a smaller corner, but he's fast. So, you know, in the blink of an eye, he can close that gap and you throw it anyway. And he just jumped the route and the, you know, and the fumbles, that was just weird for Buffalo. Cause they're usually not a team that puts it on the carpet like that. And yeah, sure. I mean, sure. Allen also had 2 touchdowns, but 11 penalties too. That's just not something I think we're used to seeing from them. This was a very un-Josh Allen game, but it was a very Sean McDermott game. You know, this is another time where a lot of it's just discipline and coaching.
Yeah.
I feel like there were a lot of really ridiculous plays being called. And, you know, Josh Allen's going to make anyone look good. It's Josh Allen is literally the lipstick on the pig that is Sean McDermott. And you know what's weird? In the second half, they literally refused to utilize James Cook, like, at all. What did he have? Like, I think I read somewhere, like, some Bills fan said he had, like, what, 5 carries in the second half? That is malpractice. And I know there's that whole thing about, oh, when you're down, you have to be pass, pass, pass. Okay, my response is, okay, so James Cook is one of the league's premier receiving backs, and you didn't even look at his direction. And there are sometimes, you know, I'm watching the TV with one of my friends last night, and I'm just holding my breath because James Cook's getting wide open and they're just like not throwing the ball. So I don't get it.
Yeah. He also had 15 carries in total on Sunday.
Yeah. Night. Except for the bulk of that was literally in the first half. That's my point.
The bulk of the penalties as well was in the first half as well. They only committed 9 penalties and then They committed 9 penalties in the first half and only committed 2. It was kind of weird how the penalties kind of flip-flop because the Patriots themselves only had 2 penalties in the first half and then proceeded to end with 8 on the night with 6 in the second half. So it was a bit of a weird flip in that case. But yeah, 11 penalties on 90 yards. That was – Bills were shooting themselves a lot in the foot in the first half. But surprisingly, the Patriots just didn't they just didn't capitalize as much as they should have. All right, that is our recap of Pats and the Bills. Anything else you want to touch on before we move on?
Nope. That's pretty much it. It's very open and shut there. You know, it's a great win for New England. Weird loss for Buffalo, but hey, maybe, just maybe, New England might be competitive again.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into another upset that happened this week. concerning another unbeaten team, the Broncos, getting the win against the Eagles on the road, might add you, on the road, 21-17. We'll talk about that after the break. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. He's CJ. I'm Chris. Broncos and the Eagles, their first loss of the season, 21-17, thanks to a second half comeback in this game. And I think this is a good carryover from their, let's start with the Broncos first. I think this is a good carryover win from their win against the Bengals on Monday night, where the offense was starting to turn it around a little bit. J.K. Dobbins had 100 yards rushing. They're starting to pick it up a little bit more. And this week, they did so. Bo Nix, 24 for 39, 242 yards and a touchdown. J.K. Dobbins, four yards per carry with a touchdown. Cortland Sutton, 8 catches, 99 yards. Evan Ingram, remember him? 1 touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
But the Broncos, man, they started out slow. They did. But now they're starting to cruise a little bit. 18 fourth quarter points that catapulted them to the win. And I'd say the call of the week here was Sean Payton electing to go for 2 after they scored to bring themselves within 1. Go for 2, they get it. Now they're up 1. Kick a field goal late, and that ends up making a 4. That's a huge difference right there. Because at that point, you know, you add in the field goal. Now it's a 4-point game. You have forced the Eagles to now have to go for 6. And because the Eagles were in field goal range right at the end of that game. They were in field goal range. And if that's a 3-point game, Jake Elliott is more likely than not hitting that. We're going to overtime. So that was a massive, massive, massive call to make if you're Sean Payton. And, well, history's shown Sean Payton is the type of guy to make a gutsy call like that, and it's gone his way more than a few times at this point. But yeah, the Broncos starting to get hot a little bit. CJ, what do you think?
Wow. How do you like that? 18 fourth quarter points, like you said, 18 unanswered. What a complete collapse for Philly in home. Or at home, literally no more undefeated teams. Just good God. And unlike the Bills Patriots game, where it was a tight, like down to the wire, like nail biter finish, the Eagles were pretty much on cruise control, you know, leading 17-3, and then they lost 21-17. Like, this was a game that you had. A game you had no reason to lose, a game that was not that close until you decided, hey, I think it would be fun to give up 18 unanswered. That seems like something I think I'd enjoy. And which is weird, because as much as people like to give Jalen Hurts a lot of crap for refusing to throw the ball, he did go 23 of 38, 280 yards, and 2 touchdowns as well. And he only had 2 carries. So yeah, it's not like he can't throw the ball. It's just, I don't know. Denver said, hey, I guess we've had enough. And I feel like a lot of it can be told in the team stats. So I mentioned, you know, Hurts passing the ball a lot. But what's Philly's bread and butter, Chris? Running the ball. And the Broncos outgained the Eagles on the ground by 95 yards. If my math is correct, which is probably not, 130 to 45. And the Eagles still had like a few more passing yards, but Philly not being able to run the ball is something that I never thought I would ever have to mention. The Broncos also obtained 23 first downs compared to Philly's 16. The Broncos made almost a third of their third downs, going 5 for 16, whereas Philly went 2 for 11. The Philadelphia offensive line, right, which is notoriously stout, right? It's an offensive line that keeps Hurts upright, allowed 6 sacks. That Broncos pass rush is getting nasty. And the defense as a whole, we know with Sertan and all them, that's just not even to sneeze at. And Denver also dominated time of possession with over 34 minutes holding the ball compared to Philly's, I'm going to round and call it 26. This was a game Philly had no reason to lose, and they did. Offensive line play was terrible. The running game didn't go anywhere, and Denver just capitalized. But Sean Payton, that decision to go for two, when I saw that and they got it, it's like, yeah, yeah, no, that for me, that was the momentum changer. Because even though Philly has the lead, you've put them on their heels. You put the scare into them, and they were playing scared. They were playing conservative at the end, just like, all right, we have the ball. We're just going to sit on it, you know, and try to play keep away from Denver. And when Denver got that ball back, was there any doubt? And then, of course, you had to force Philly into a Hail Mary type of situation where that was like 99.9% of the time usually don't work out.
I was about to say, I won't even call it a Hail Mary. It was a 35-yard
bomb. Yeah, it was like a 30-yard bomb, but still. But it was just a simple, you send everyone to the end zone and the defense plays prevent. Like the one time ever that prevent defense actually does anything.
Yeah. Looking at Philly, though, this is 3 games in a row now where they've only played one half of football. 3 games in a row where they only play one half of football. This week against Broncos, or technically, I mean, you could say 3 quarters. Because they were able to score in the third quarter. But 17-3 lead going into the fourth quarter, they blow and lose. Against the Buccaneers, had a massive lead in the second half, and they blew that. Almost blew the lead to the Buccaneers. It really, the only thing that stopped the Buccaneers from winning that game was a Baker Mayfield interception at the goal line. That's the only thing that stopped them. Week before that, terrible first half against the Rams, and they came back and won that game. So something's got to give here, and going to point a big fat finger at the offensive coordinator, Kevin Petullo. That's where I'm pointing my finger at. And it seems that Eagles Nation is also getting sick of their new offensive coordinator as well. Top of the hour, inside the Eagles, Saquon Barkley's jaw-dropping confession just makes Kevin Petullo look worse, by Patrick Ruffino 1 hour ago. Saquon Barkley had some praise for his quarterback, Jalen Hurts, while throwing some unwanted criticism and shade at his offensive coordinator, Kevin Petullo. After another anemic offensive performance and their devastating 21-17 loss, Barkley let the media in on a secret. He stated that it was Hurts who drew up the play that results in him in scoring his only score on a deep 47-yard touchdown pass in the third quarter to give them a 17-3 lead. And Saquon Barkley only had 8 touches in this game. And I think this goes to show a weird criticism for the Eagles to have. And their main criticism, and like, you look at almost every single game that the Eagles have lost, say, let's take like the last 3 years, right? It's really because Nick Sirianni or whoever on the coaching staff starts listening to the media a little too much, and they try to just shove it back in your face and say, told you so. And in this case, it's them. This is now back-to-back weeks where they're trying to force feed A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith, which in this case it worked because Devonta Smith, 8 catches on 10 targets. He had a big day. He didn't score any touchdowns, but A.J. Brown, 5 catches, 43 yards. They missed him on a bad deep ball, though, where he stopped running. It was after the game, he said it was a case of miscommunication or whatever, or mistiming, stuff like that. But in a game like this, especially when you have reports of reports the day prior to this game on Saturday from Diana Russini that both AJ Brown and Devonta Smith are getting pissed with the play calling, with how things are being set up in the red zone, stuff like that. And if you're AJ Brown and Devonta Smith, for good reason, because Devonta Smith is currently projected less than 600 yards receiving. AJ Brown is projected about 650 yards receiving, according to ESPN. And Saquon Barkley is projected half of the rushing yards that he had from last season.
Oof.
It's bad. It's not
that's,
good.
That's horrible.
And that's yeah, it. And even like last week against the Bucks, Jalen Hurts had 10 yards passing and zero completions in the second half this week, week four. Sorry, I misread the graphic there. Thank you, Adam. But that A shows they've only been able to play one half of football the last 3 weeks. And B, there's something going on with the off. I think Kevin Petullo is the problem here, and they probably need to do something about it.
Yeah, and the worst part is, Chris, you're Philly, this isn't new.
Yeah.
This is exactly, more or less, it's a tiny bit better, I will admit, probably because, you know, now that the offense is more settled, that they have lost a really good offensive coordinator. And now their offense is struggling. It seems to be a lot of their success seems to be very, shall we say, coordinator driven. And this is exactly what happened when they lost the Chiefs. They lost Jonathan Gannon and Shane Steichen. Well, now they've lost Kellen Moore, and the offense is still being sluggish. And I know it's early, you don't want to be super reactionary, but Petullo has to go. That is the only takeaway that anyone should have, especially after what Saquon said. I mean, I don't know how anyone else thinks otherwise. I'm sure our good friends at Squawking Eagles would agree.
I was just about to say, I'm about to send him a DM. For our listeners, not the viewers. The viewers can see this. This was the tweet that I was referring to from Diana Russini. And I quote, AJ Brown and bold and italicized and Devonta Smith are frustrated with their roles in the Eagles offense. Multiple sources tell me one is venting more publicly than the other, but both wanting something to change specifically in the red zone. I would assume that the one that Russini is referring to is AJ Brown because of social media posts, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah. No worries, Adam. Yeah, I'm going to text Squawking Eagles right now and get their opinion on Kevin Petullo real quick.
Yeah, I would imagine it's not going to be very positive. And no. Frankly, nor should it be. So overall, this is something that I also wanted to say about the Eagles is not only does Petullo have to go, but like you said, something's got to give. Something did give. But low-key, this kind of loss might be in their best interest. Because do you know who this Eagles team reminds me of? Last season's Kansas City Chiefs, where they started out hot. They were undefeated for the longest time, but it was fluky. There were no convincing wins. Every game was a down-to-the-wire nail-biter, where their opponent usually just shot themselves in the foot and Kansas City would escape with an undeserved W, right? And we saw what happened. They went to the Super Bowl. Their luck ran out. They went to they went against a team that really didn't make that many mistakes, and they got clobbered. But for Philly, that they opened the same way, where every game was a one-score game, and they finally lost. So hopefully this forces some self-reflection instead of them just saying, yeah, we're good. Sometimes you need to stay grounded. You need to stay humble. And hopefully they can take the right lessons from this. And if they don't, well, then let's be real. We have bigger problems.
I think that what you just said is exactly how, besides what I just pulled from this Eagles article quote. He did say, you know, now we are actually facing adversity. Now we have something to actually face, and now we have something to overcome. So I think that they are taking this on the chin the way they need to, and move on to Thursday night, where they're taking on the Giants. And here's the other thing too, is the first 5 weeks of the season for the Eagles were a bit of a gauntlet. It was a bit of a gauntlet going up five of these teams. The five teams that they played to start the season are either one of them being a fringe playoff team, the rest being playoff teams. Dallas, Kansas City, Rams, Bucks, Broncos, Cowboys, fringe playoff team. The rest are going to make, or maybe not the Broncos, but at the very least, are going to make a playoff run. They are going to be playoff contenders. So it's not going to be easy, or it wasn't going to be easy by any stretch of the means. And that's why every single game was a one score game. But you also have to take into account, with that being said, you're not going to win all five of those games either. So I think that's something that you have to come to grips with if you're Philly or just an Eagles fan. Obviously, it sucks. You would have loved to have been 5-0 going into that this Thursday night game against the Giants, but that's just not the way the wave goes sometimes. All right.
Unfortunately so. I mean, you weren't going to win all five, and like I said, it's probably for the best they didn't. They have to realize that something is broken. And hopefully they realize they do. When this many players are unhappy and changing things, you got to listen.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Bucs find themselves in another game of the year. And all four wins have come now on a last-second field goal. All that and more. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. He's CJ. I'm Chris. The Bucks and the Seahawks. Bucks get the win again, 38-35. And boy, were we treated to a freaking game. Another game where the total amount of yards was damn near 900 yards. Both quarterbacks throwing for over 340 yards. Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield themselves combined for six passing touchdowns. Sam Darnold had four. Baker had two. Rashad White, playing for the injured Bucky Irving, had two touchdowns. Amika Igbuka, in the absence of Mike Evans, has stolen the wide receiver one job from Chris Godwin. Stab a knife in my freaking heart as a Chris Godwin fantasy owner, and for anyone else that's a Chris Godwin fantasy owner. Although my claim to fame this week is picking up Rico Dowdle day of, and he got 38. So I'm that guy.
Sure. No, I'm messing with you. Yeah, buddy. Yeah.
I'm not. I'm about to be 0-5.
Wait, what? Really?
In one of my leagues, yes. CeeDee Lamb got hurt. Brock Bowers is hurt.
Oh, well, injuries. You know, that's the worst part. That's like the part of fantasy that'll really drive you up the wall, man.
Injuries and underperformance.
Yeah, dude. I have CeeDee Lamb too. Oh, yeah. I have CeeDee Lamb and Bucky Irving in one league.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. But I hear you. Like, you know, that's just sometimes it be like that, you know, as the children say. I'm just a messenger.
Yeah. First half, 13-7. Bucks had the advantage, and then the floodgates opened in the second half. I can't even begin to tell you the amount of yards that were put up in the second half, but I can tell you, do the math, 28 plus 25, that is 53 points scored in the second half alone. Bucks were 7-for-11 on third down. Seattle was 6-for-9 while also being 1-for-1 on fourth down. Like, two teams that had defenses that just could not get off the field. JSN looked amazing. Cooper Kupp had a solid day. And I think the one of the overall storylines is, damn, Ohio State has some freaking has some damn good receivers coming out of there. That was probably one of the bigger takeaways for me. But Baker Mayfield and the Bucks do it again. On top of that, they're 3-0 on the road. Seahawks haven't been great at home, unfortunately. But Baker Mayfield, man, only 4 incomplete passes from Baker Mayfield. Only 6 from Sam Darnold. I don't really know what else I have to really say to get the point across that this was an absolute game from these two. And it's crazy that we're at this point where we're talking about Baker Mayfield and shit, even Sam Darnold in this light, because both of these guys were backups in Carolina. Baker Mayfield was taking practice squad edge rusher reps. And Sam Darnold was a washout. Insane. I don't really know what else. Bucks are winning the NFC South. This was the Seahawks. This loss would sting a little bit more if it wasn't for the Cardinals selling it against the Titans. Basically at the same exact time that the Seahawks were losing this game.
Yeah. Oh, my God. By the way, as far as Baker and Darnold being good, I think the key is do not ever go or set foot in Carolina, New York, or Cleveland.
Yep.
I mean, that's pretty much it. You know, I mean, like you said, both of these guys have just found new life on new teams, and I'm happy for them. I am. But as far as why we think Seattle lost this game, one thing that I will tell you, and this is something that I have found interesting, the Seahawks were without Devin Witherspoon and Julian Love for that game. That's like the best safety you have and your corner one against the Bucks, who are notorious for airing out the ball. Yeah, you could definitely tell they were missing him too. Baker was, you know, just going back, you know, sitting back, reading through his progressions, you know, getting whatever he wanted. I mean, look, you know, the pass rush had to make up for it, you know, and I mean, why wouldn't they? Because the Buccaneers' offensive line was hurt, except for the fact they only allowed one sack. So Seattle literally could not even take advantage of literally the one sack. I mean, literally can't take advantage of arguably the most injured offensive line in the entire league. So yeah, do with that what you will.
Yeah. At that point, the only way to really chalk this game up is who had the ball last and who was going to make the big mistake. And in this case, it was Sam Darnold throwing an interception late that led to Tampa Bay getting the field goal from Chase McLaughlin to win the game. And that's now 4 wins. All 4 wins coming on a last-second field goal. And I'm not gonna say that, you know, this is on Sam Darnold, at least the interception, because that was a weird, weird play where he was getting hit, looked like he was trying to just throw the ball in, like at the ground at someone's feet, ends up ricocheting off of someone's helmet into the defender's hands. Unlucky play. And I would hope that that play itself doesn't define what Sam Darnold was able to do in this game, because he was electric. Both quarterbacks for that matter. And
yeah, this isn't really a game you can blame Darnold. Like you said, the pick just flat out wasn't his fault. It was just a good game, but you know the rules of games, especially shootouts. Someone's got to lose.
Yeah.
Unless you're the Cowboys and Packers, but that's neither here nor there. That's a weird Jerry Jones tomfoolery if there ever was them. But, yeah, but, you know, in Seattle, you know, that's a tough place to play. But I kind of have to say about Tampa what I said about Eagles and last year's Chiefs. None of these victories are convincing. Don't get me wrong. They're a great watch. They're electric. They're really cool, but it's not sustainable. Like you said, like it's just last second field goal after last second field goal. I mean, if I'm a fan, I think I would tell you personally that it is just not something that I myself would be hanging my hat on, you know?
No. No, it shows that you can get the job done in crunch time. That is for certain.
I mean, yeah, when I mean, if you're clutch, that's one thing. But
yeah.
Why are you letting the game get to that, especially where there are some times where they shouldn't? Like
the Jets.
Look, I can forgive the Falcons, right?
Yeah.
I can forgive the Falcons game. I on a personal level, I can. You know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's week one. A lot of weird stuff happens. I could forgive Philly because they're good. But Houston, which has been offensively challenged since C.J. Stroud's rookie year, heck, since the playoffs of C.J. Stroud's rookie year, and the New York Jets, I don't know.
The Texans, I'll give a pass because that defense is still good. That's still a good defense, and I think that was the beginning of when Tampa's O-line started to deteriorate a little bit. But yeah, the Jets shouldn't be a 2-point game. But Jets have shown that they've had some games where they're a little frisky this year. Still looking for their first win. Are they the only team that hasn't won a game now with the Titans and the Saints winning?
The New York Jets, yes. They are 0-5, the only 0-5 team.
Speaking of I want to get away from this game before we wrap up. Let's see what the Jets have coming up. Broncos in London. Nice. That's not watching that. Carolina, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and then the Pats on Thursday Night Football in November. So looking at the Bucs upcoming schedule, though. We mentioned already, based in the Pats, the first weekend of November. They got the Niners next week. That's going to be a tough one. Detroit, that's going to be a slobber knocker. Saints should be able to handle them easily, but divisional game, so you never really know. Buffalo, slobber knocker. Rams, slobber knocker. Arizona, they should win, but...
They should.
Cardinals are another team where it's like you don't know which team you're going to get. But this is a tough stretch coming up for the Bucs. Obviously, we said it's going to be tough for the Patriots when they go to Tampa Bay, but that could easily be just as tough for Tampa Bay against the Pats.
Yeah. Even though, you know, Tampa should be healthier. New England, that's not a team that's going to roll over and die anymore. That's not a team you're going to get an easy win on.
No. And this kind of goes to the same thing with what I said about the Eagles. Don't expect the Bucs to win every single one of these games. I mean, unless they stay hot or get hot, like they're hot right now, and if they stay hot through these next seven games, then yeah, obviously they'll win every single freaking game. But I don't see them winning every single one. I might pick them to win every single one because I'm a freaking idiot, but that's just me.
Many such cases.
Yeah. That is all the scheduled content that we have for you today. Other NFL news, Mark Sanchez. Goodness, that was weird. Started out with the report that he had been stabbed multiple times and was hospitalized, and it was all prayers for Mark Sanchez. And then a couple hours later, the Indianapolis Police Department said, nope, actually, he was kind of attacking an elderly man in a drunken rage over a parking spot. And the guy stabbed him in self-defense. So, that's a tough look there. But if obviously not... I am condemning what Mark Sanchez did, but hearing that this was in a drunken rage, you also wonder what could be going on behind the scenes for Mark Sanchez. For him, because he was in Indianapolis, and the Colts were in town. Was he supposed to be on the call for that game?
I'm not certain, actually.
Because he's a Fox analyst. Let me check right now. Because this, it was on Fox. So I don't know if he was supposed to be on the call for that game or not, but that's hoping that he's not dealing with something worse, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like I said,
I hear you. It's just, this is essentially an off-field butt fumble. Imagine being so drunk, you decide to attack a delivery driver and you get folded. Hit him with the 1-2 pepper spray knife combo.
Yeah.
You know what? You can take him off the Jets, but you can't take the Jets out of Mark Sanchez. That's what this comes down to.
Oh, geez. All right. That's all the scheduled content that we have for you today. Thank you for tuning in to another Tuesday episode of the Fumble Rooski Podcast. We have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Google Podcast, and so much more. Be sure to follow our Instagram, FumbleRooski_podcast, to keep up with the pod and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, CJ Medeiros, I'm Chris Kostich. We'll see you on Friday. Over and out.